This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It is good to have you along. Today we're talking about dementia, not just Alzheimer's, but various forms of dementia. And you may have been hearing stories lately in the news about new treatments and prevention tips. Well, we're going to be talking today with the director of Geisinger's Memory and Cognition Program, Dr. Glenn Finney. He's joined us to update us and share this information, and we appreciate it, Doctor. Can you first start this with kind of a definition of what different forms of dementia we could be talking about? A lot of people use Alzheimer's as kind of a catch-all, but obviously there's different forms.
Yep, you're quite right, man. It's a question that comes up a lot for our patients and families and in the community. So, you know, dementia really is a general term for when you have multiple areas of memory and or thinking or personality planning that are damaged enough to cause real world dysfunction. If you wanna think of it like comparing arthritis, for example, is the example I often give. So dementia can be likened to what arthritis is like for the knee, except for the brain. Now, saying someone's got arthritis in their knee, all you've said is you've got a really bad pain problem, right? That is probably got some inflammation. Just like with dementia, all you've said is you got a really bad brain problem, probably with some underlying what we call neurodegenerative pathology. There are many different types of causes of dementia, just like there's many different types of causes of arthritis in a knee. You know, in arthritis, you know, people can have gouty arthritis, they can have rheumatoid arthritis, and they can have osteoarthritis, with osteoarthritis being the most common cause. In dementia, you can have things like Parkinson's disease dementia, Lewy body dementia, vascular dementia, and Alzheimer's dementia, with Alzheimer's disease being the most common cause of dementia over the age of 65, although by no means is it the only one. And just like you can have multiple causes of arthritis hitting your knees, you can have multiple causes of dementia hitting your brain. It is very common for people to have mixed Alzheimer's disease with vascular disease, sometimes even with Lewy body disease or Parkinson's disease dementia. And then there's more exotic ones like frontotemporal lobar degenerations, like what Bruce Willis was suffering with, you know, but that's sort of in a nutshell. So I think people use Alzheimer's disease, or AD for short, sort of almost as a interchangeable with dementia because it's the most common. It's like calling any, web browser searching Googling, right? You know, to use a modern example, we used to say it's like calling anything you use to photocopy a Xerox back in the day. But that's, I think, gives you sort of a feel for the relationship.
Now, is there one that is, I don't want to say preferable to have, but are there ones that, forms of this that are easier to either, you know, maybe not eradicate, but to treat and hold off longer?
Sure. There's sort of an overlap category that we call reversible dementia. So there's a number of things that can cause memory and thinking problem that look like a dementia, if they go long enough, can become a more permanent dementia that, if caught early, we can actually help. Things like vitamin deficiencies, hormone imbalances, electrolyte abnormalities, slow chronic infections. So it's always important, if people are thinking they might be having memory or personality changes, to get in touch with their primary care provider and get this ball rolling, checked out. And almost all of those are medical causes that your primary care provider can really help you with. That would be the best, because you can fix them. You know, very common other sort of mimics are like anxiety and depression, which are also risk factors for full-blown neurodegenerative dementia that, if you treat early, you can fix. Brain-impairing medications, I hate to say it, but a lot of times the medications we put people on can cause memory problems, and a few of them, especially ones that have a property called anticholinergic property, can actually be associated with increased risk of dementia. So getting checked out, letting your doctor know early, those would be the best because we can fix them. Honestly, as strange as it would say, I would say the next best would be honestly vascular dementia, because theoretically we can prevent or stop or at least slow down 90% of the roughly of the contributions for vascular dementia. So vascular dementia can be caused by things like having multiple strokes. In fact, sometimes people don't even think of it as a dementia. They think, oh, I've had a couple strokes, but we do classify that often as a dementia. You can also get what's called subcortical vascular dementia. So multiple infarct or multiple stroke dementia is from multiple medium to large strokes usually. Whereas subcortical vascular dementia more mimics the more classic gradual neurodegenerative conditions where it's tiny blood vessels, usually deep in the brain, that are getting damaged. And they call those tiny types of strokes that we call lacunar strokes, but not always. They also call another type of damage called ischemic demyelination. You might see that if you ever get your hands on an MRI of the brain report, or I use the generic term leukoariosis in our clinic, but it's because the fatty coverings on the wiring of the brain, the axons, is getting damaged from tiny blood vessels starving the sheaths, what we call myelin, and they cause that damage to basically the insulation of the wiring of your brain, and that causes the brain to glitch as well. Now, we can't reverse vascular damage, but your brain can, to a degree, learn to work around it. And if we tightly control vascular risks, things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, smoking, things like that, we can slow accumulating damage and sometimes even stop it in its tracks. So that's why it's important to take care of your vascular brain health, which is pretty similar to taking care of your cardiovascular health. So that's a nice added benefit, right? Control blood sugars, things like that, cholesterol. So it's very important to deal with those. And those might even help reduce other causes of dementia as well. I would say after that, as bizarre as it is for me to say it, in the 2020s, maybe the next best would be Alzheimer's disease. Not because it's good, it's a terrible disease. All of these progressive neurodegenerative dementias are, but at least for Alzheimer's disease, we have symptomatic medications that help your quality of life, behavior, activities be a little better than they otherwise would be, even though you still decline. And we now have a new class of medications for the very mildest of the mild, if you're mild dementia or even a pre-dementia, mild kind of impairment. You can see we use mild too much. There's a lot of naming problems in the field in that way. But if we catch it very early, we can start you on this other class of disease-modifying therapy. And they don't make you better, but they changed sort of the slope of the downhill decline so that over years, maybe you see this separation that the people on these truly disease-modifying treatments are just having a slower rate of decline. And buying time, especially in late life, can really mean a lot for keeping people independent more, keeping them out of skilled nursing more, and even potentially, we don't know yet for this class, but in other even symptomatic treatments, good treatment can even delay death. So we know they work to varying degrees, but early finding it is better, gives you better options, gives us better ways we can help. And also, even at the very least, if you have, you know, there are some dementias we just don't have a lot yet for, we can at least get a plan for advanced care planning, care and support, at a time that the person fighting the dementia can have some meaningful understanding of what they're facing and meaningful input into what they want their plan to be.
Okay. If there is a family history and, you know, let's say I'm 30, 35, I wish, are there steps people can take just to, with diet and so forth, to kind of ward it off when, you know, for when the time does come?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think there's a number of things that you can do, right? We do now know that there's a huge number of causes of dementia that are modifiable, and that if you do them ahead of time, you can actually reduce risk. So that's things like a good diet. Mediterranean style diets have been the main ones that we've seen. Good exercise, you know, doing moderate cardiovascular exercise where you're getting your heart rate up at least enough that maybe you're kind of having a little tiny trouble talking while doing the exercise for about 30 minutes a day. Keeping intellectually active, both practicing the skills you want to preserve in life, but also learning completely new skills outside of your area of knowledge. Keeping socially active, hugely important for brain health and for safety and monitoring. We are social beings. We need other people to keep our brains healthy. We also have been doing more with making sure we're covering micronutrients, with making sure people take a good multivitamin. Interestingly enough, if you like coffee, also a little bit tea, there are studies that do suggest that helps to reduce your, that helps to reduce your risk, you know, like maybe 2 cups a day, but not sugar and cream. Don't be careful of those. But also things like if you eat a lot of fish, that can be good for brain health. You don't have to eat a lot of fish. If you can't do that, eat take an omega-3 fatty acid supplement. Make sure that your hearing and vision are working well, and if not, get those corrected. That's an important one. Make sure any anxiety or depression is being managed and controlled, because if you do that, that reduces that risk. There are a ton of things, more things than we realize, that we can do now to help people bend the curve, reduce their risk. And those modifiable risk factors are actually much more loading into late onset dementia cause than a family history. Now, having even, you know, parents or brothers and sisters with dementia, if they start to get memory problems late in life, like after 65, I mean, a little risk, but not greatly increased risk. You're still at the biggest risk just from your personal age. Younger onset dementia, when you have parents or brothers or sisters who develop their memory or thinking problems like before the age of 65, especially before the age of 60, what we call younger onset dementias. We're moving towards younger. We used to call it early onset, but then people got confused about whether it meant it started early or you were just early in the course of your dementia. Younger onset dementia, that tends to have a higher risk of a genetic contributor or cause. So that is where family history may become a more important part of your story.
Okay. And it seems like in the last, probably through the course of your career, I know I wrote a paper on Alzheimer's in high school, so we're talking 40 years ago, but this seems like a whole different world now. So it sounds almost an exponential increase in knowledge in this. Is that an accurate description?
You know, I would say it may seem that way from the outside, but from the inside, we have been gradually, painstakingly through decades of dedicated research building our knowledge and base to get to this point. I will tell you, people have been working on things like having markers for Alzheimer's type pathology, for example, that you could do in living people for decades before we really got a number of different options for that, which was important step because every time we tried to find treatments targeting pathology, if we didn't have a marker during life, if they had the right pathology, we had kind of mixed samples of people who, just because their symptoms resembled what we thought the pathology would cause, the symptoms are based off where in the brain it hits, not what's hitting it. Although certain types of diseases have more likelihood to hit in certain parts of the brain early. So we used to use that, but now we could actually also confirm that, yep, and by our biomarkers, you also have a good signal that you have the actual pathology that we want to target. That allowed us to take research we'd been doing for decades, multiple different directions converging on certain pathologies that must be part of the story and target those, and really had a number of different failures, toxicity reasons, couldn't get it strong enough, and finally we got to where we have now, currently on the market, FDA approved, two treatments that are disease modifying, built off of decades of research, some going back to the 20th century, that actually are finally starting to bend the curve. And they're teaching us more about how these diseases, specifically Alzheimer's disease, develop and progress by how we are learning from the people who are fighting these diseases with these treatments. So it does, I will say, it's almost like we were painstakingly building up to this, and then finally we reached a tipping point where we could finally see some real payment of dividends. And that's why I think we're seeing the rapid development of new tools and new work processes and new ways to treat, because we finally reached that tipping point where it could actually be used in real world care. And I will tell you, the other thing is, we had a huge investment through the Brains Initiative, the Cures Act, other infusions of really strong funding for research a decade or two ago that is like provided the fuel we needed to advance the field. Because it takes a lot of work to get where we are today.
Now, I'm late 50s. My coworker is late 30s. We both talk about how things are always sort of slipping away. At what point is that a real problem, or is that something that everybody's going to deal with at some point?
Yep. Well, my rule of thumb is this. Even with healthy, successful, super aging, every year it takes you a little bit longer to memorize things, a little bit longer to pull things from memory, a little bit longer to kind of think things through. We call that processing speed. So even with healthy, successful aging, year by year, that seems to get slower. And that's not just true for people in middle or old age. That's even true in your 20s. Like a 21-year-old is faster on average than a 26-year-old. So, and I think there's some interesting studies that I kind of like to cite. They did an intriguing study of people in their 20s, okay? So these were college age kids, no age effects, no dementia. And they asked them to identify celebrities by their picture, tell them their names, okay? And they did a survey before they showed them the pictures of how many people they knew by the same first name. And what they did was they timed them. And they found the more people you knew with the same first name as the celebrity, the slower you were pulling up the name of that celebrity, because you had to kind of search through your knowledge base to find the right answer. So one way I like to think of that accumulating year after year processing speed burning is it's the price of wisdom, because you've learned a lot. Now, there can be other problems that cause processing speed problems, like accumulating vascular disease, some of the Parkinsonian disorders or other things. So if it goes too far, that can be a problem. What I tell people is if you give yourself all the time in the world to learn things, all the time in the world to do things that are cognitively demanding, and you're not multitasking, which is rapid switching, and not working in a distracting environment, which is, again, rapidly switching to what's going on there, what's going on here, you should be able to do all the things you used to be able to do. It just takes longer. If that's the case, that's probably within the range of, average performance for age. Now, if despite all that, you're still having problems, or the changes are more rapid, as opposed to gradual, or it's just gotten to a point where it seems like it's really starting to interfere with things, or you're just not sure, talk to your primary care provider about that. It never hurts to bring it up and get checked. Honestly, for those over the age of 65 especially, I usually recommend that their primary care providers do some form of little memory thinking test with them yearly, just to keep an eye on things, make sure they are falling in that normal range. It can be as simple as a little 2 to 3 minute test called the mini cog. It can be a little more advanced, like a mini mental state examination or a Montreal cognitive assessment, or a St. Louis test. There's all sorts of little tests that you can do in a clinic visit just to make sure people are testing out where you would expect. If you got an abnormal result in that, doesn't mean you have a dementia or even a problem, just means maybe we need to investigate this more.
All right. In closing, what's the one thing you can leave our listeners with, kind of a takeaway and a reason for optimism in all this?
Yeah. So what I would say is dementia is a highly likely thing as we get older, but it is not an inevitable thing as we get older. Practicing good brain health, taking care of your brain and your body and your mental and social activities can bend the curve and reduce your risk substantially. You have a say in your risk. It's not absolute, it's not a guarantee, but you can bend the odds in your favor. Work with your primary care providers to have the best brain health you can, and work with them as you get into ages where it becomes a higher risk to keep an eye on things. And if there is a problem, you don't want to put your head in the sand, get it checked out. Early on, it may be something we can fix. Early on, it might be something we can bend the curve on for you. Or at the worst, early on, it's something we can have your voice heard in how you want your care to proceed.
You've been listening to the WPGM Community Forum with Dr. Glenn Finney, the director of the Geisinger Memory and Cognition Program, talking today about dementia and various forms of dementia and all the latest information and developments. Doctor, thank you for being with us on the program. We want to remind our listeners that this program will be on our website, as always, on Monday morning after it airs. Thanks for joining us today on the program. This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the Community Forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.